This is University Radio Nottingham.
Okay, so, hello listeners, all three of you, if I had to guess the number. So, hello and welcome back to the fifth Melbourne Experience Show, now half a decade, even though we're counting in numbers, not years. Now you may be asking yourself, what is the Melob Experience? And that is indeed a very good question. It is an hour-long brain ramble zone, sometimes with guests, sometimes without. And today, we do have a very special guest who we'll get to in just a second. However, if you do find us mildly entertaining, maybe this will go beyond spoken elevator music and turn into a very enjoyable hour. So very quickly, I always go through this. Why the name Melob? Well, I thought, you know, my last name, Melor, add an op, very funny to me and no one else. But turns out to be perfect because my co-host, who is not here unfortunately, Jacob, you know, all comes together. And so in this show, there are three regular sections. Well, they're planned to be three regular sections as well as a special section. The regular sections today consist of some Netflix shows, and by Netflix shows I mean one particular Netflix show, chatting about books, a bit of news, and then a special section which, as long-time listeners will know, you'll have to wait till the very end to find out. And so, without further ado, I'm co-host Ben, not joined by co-host Jacob. He is currently back home for Easter. And so, I'm joined by the special guest, Mr. Alex Duke.
Hi Ben, how are you? Thanks for having me on this Easter Sunday.
Yeah, no worries. I'm happy to have you. I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, very well. Had a decent brunch. You know, it's been a fairly quiet Easter Sunday. I'm currently in a COVID house at the moment. I don't have it, but both my parents do. So it's been quite a quiet week. But yeah, it's been good. And yeah, you messaged. I saw your message on the chat about potentially talking about the Queen's Gambit, and it was one of my favourite shows last year. Came out in the lockdown, obviously, and I remember how good it was. So yeah, I'm really happy to be here. Well done on the show so far.
Well, thank you. You see, this is the grand reveal. Mr. Alex Duke is no normal University Radio Nottingham goer. He is actually our wonderful head of speech, who gave me the look.
Oh, thank you.
Even do a show. So we all, you know, stand on the shoulders of giants, and that Mr. Giant is here, well, not here in the studio, but here on Skype. So, yeah, how come you've managed to avoid COVID? Do you think it's just sort of potluck, or...?
Well, I actually haven't. I mean, I got it about a month ago when I was still in Notts before Easter. So I think at the moment, they talk about that kind of antibody phase that you have for about 3 months after testing positive. So I must be in that because, as I said, I've literally been in the same house as my parents for about a week. But yeah, nothing's happened to me. So yeah, I think it's the antibodies.
Well, you've managed to fall lucky then. I mean, to be fair, it's been quite surprising because we've not had, other than sort of a little outbreak over Christmas, we've not had too many cases amongst the radio station. Mm. Being back, it's been sort of really lucky, actually.
Yeah, I think when Omicron kind of hit, there were quite a few cases. But yeah, it's good because I remember last year, we were kind of like during the sort of full COVID year, we were all in and out of the studios. One week we'd be allowed in and the next week we wouldn't be. Because, you know, the guidance was constantly changing from the government. But yeah, now it's great that we can just constantly have a full schedule.
It is wonderful. I mean, you know, I'm happy to have a full schedule because it means that I'm actually here in the flesh. I mean, to be honest, if I joined last year during COVID when everything was online, I don't even know if I would have stuck around, to be honest. That's the sort of sad truth about it. But sort of to let our listeners at home sort of know a bit more about yourself, you know, how long have you been with the radio station, you know, sort of role in it, how you became head of speech, all that hoo-ha?
Yeah, well, I joined in my first year. I really wanted to talk about sport, and I wanted a capacity to sort of talk about my passion, which is football. And URN Sport has always been a great place to, you know, discuss football and also learn a lot more about other sports and have the opportunities to kind of broadcast live sports as well. So I didn't do that much in my first year, but we did this show where we kind of cover Premier League games on a Saturday afternoon. So I got fairly involved in that. And then in second year, I kind of got more involved, and by third year I kind of had my own regular show with my old housemate Benji, and from there I initially ran for head of sport, which I lost to Tom Allen, which to be honest, it works out really well because Dom's like done an absolutely fantastic job this year. But there was still an opening for head of speech because of COVID, I think. There are a lot of positions that weren't initially filled in the election, so there had to be sort of a second election. I ran for head of speech and managed to get it, and it's been a lot of fun. Like I'm proud that I've got sort of a good range of shows going on. I mean, obviously yours, Ben, and Emily's, which is the rotation show in this slot's really good as well. And there's been a lot of sort of new content, a lot of content focused on political and social issues. We have an LGBTQIA plus show, which I'm not going to say that's the first time we've ever had an LGBTQIA plus show, because I'm not sure, but I think it's the first time we've had it since I've been at the uni, so I'm really glad that's there. But yeah, there's been a lot of achievement in culture, and of course with news and sport, it's been great to be sort of back in person, because we've just obviously finished all the student union election coverage, and well done to yourself on that. You know, you and Rebecca and the other Ben, just to name a few, were great with that. And yeah, we've got more Varsity coming up in May, and obviously Ben, you did that local elections video, so I hope we can do a little bit more about the local elections in May, kind of on the pulse and stuff, because I think it's going to be very interesting what some of the outcomes of those might be. But yeah, speech generally, we did badly in verses, although I think it was pretty close.
You lost by 1,000 points, I think that's what I heard.
Well, the thing is, I think I don't want to doubt some of the calculations, but the important thing is we gave it the best shot that we could. Like everyone tried really hard in different ways, and I don't doubt that everyone in speech did everything they could. So, you know, Ben, you were willing to drive to Sutton Bonington, I remember, which is quite a big
I got vetoed due to time inefficiency for points
I maybe
it was a great lot of fun. It almost felt like Nottingham was sort of a playground, which is, you know, something not really had the chance to experience, really. Sort of, you know, cooped up in home, doing nothing. It was tremendous fun.
Well, I think, like, it's a really rare social as well. Like, I mean, maybe other societies do it, but it's just one of those things that I'll look back on when I leave uni this year and think, you know, that was just, it's really creative, it's good fun, it's done in good spirits. And yeah, the three big URN socials, I guess, are that, the SRAs and the boat party. And yeah, like all three are really good fun. Are you going to the boat party in June or?
I do plan on the boat party, it should be good. My co-host Jacob should be coming as well. Once he's...
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, that should be lovely.
The problem is, it's I am going, but it's on the evening of one of our news days. So it's so on my course, we have to do these like 9 to 5 sort of news days where we prepare news.
Of course, it's events, aren't you?
Yeah, doing the URN broadcast journalism masters. But yeah, we have to do these kind of these days where we create our own TV and radio packages, we present them, we edit it together, and we put it together in a show. So I'll have that in the day, and then after that, I'll essentially be going straight to the boat party. But it'll be a long one, but the boat party is so much fun. I mean, we managed to do it last year because we organised it for that kind of week in July when everything reopened, and it was so much.
I mean, infamous photos have come out of that, including one of yourself, which has received frequent use, the gravy.
Yeah, so we were all... So you get sausages and mash every year, and there's a vegetarian option, so veggie sausages for people who don't eat meat, and you sort of line up. And for some reason, the photographer was behind the gravy and taking photos of the people collecting the gravy. So, like, I maybe slightly drunkenly sort of rose the spoon that was collecting the gravy and did a really cheesy smile. And yeah, it's become a bit of a meme template, particularly around sports. Yeah.
When I first saw that photo, I thought you'd like worked as like a, I don't know, like a stock image sort of company like that. That's sort of the, like, because it's like a professional photographer as well. It's so like professionally done, the holding of this label of gravy. I mean, I might have
to
on Twitter for context if you don't mind, but.
It's like that older guy who's in all those memes, like that stock photo guy with the grey hair.
The pain face.
That's it, yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow. But yeah, no, honestly, I'm very looking forward to that. It'll be my first official vote party, so it should be very fun. I suppose sort of, you know, time is passing. We have now learned a bit more about the Mr. Alex Duke. You know, So moving on to our nice little segment, chatting about the Queen's Gambit, which, you know, saving grace. You rode in sort of on your stallion in the URN group chat, because my co-host is obviously back home for Easter, and I didn't have another guest planned. But yeah, I'd watched the Queen's Gambit over sort of the past week, sort of with someone, and yeah, I really quite enjoyed it. So, you know, here we are chatting about it. But I suppose, how did you come to discover the show?
Well, it came out, I think, was it sort of start of 2021? I think it was in that kind of, it's not really the second lockdown, but like that, it was actually the third lockdown, but like the second long-term lockdown. And I remember sort of reading, I saw it a lot on social media, I saw advertising for it. And you know how every once in a while, like Netflix will come out, or Disney Plus or Amazon Prime will come out with a show that just gets loads of attention and therefore loads of kind of media attention. You'll get your Lad Bibles and your Joes and those kind of news organizations doing lots of features on it and stuff. So sort of articles about it and the algorithm was coming up a lot on my Facebook algorithm. Sorry, really loud motorbike just came past my window. But yeah, that was how I heard about it. It was mainly through social media, and it was obviously getting a lot of plaudits, particularly Anya Taylor-Joy's performance, obviously as Beth Harmon, the main character, the protagonist as such. There was also a pretty good cast, a good sort of supporting cast, like Thomas Brodie Sangster's been in a lot of things. Like, I remember him as obviously the kid from Love Actually, but he was in The Maze Runner, and I've just seen him in quite a lot of things. There was also the guy who played Dudley in Harry Potter, and a lot of people sort of thought, oh, is he because it looks completely different now. So I mainly sort of watched it because of the media attention, and because it was lockdown, I watched it with my girlfriend, and we did it over one of those kind of Netflix parties. I don't know if you know it was a thing that came about.
Some of them before, yeah.
They're amazing they're amazing during COVID particularly, and like, because out of term, Lucy and I live, she lives in Worcester, I live in Surrey, so we do them quite a lot now, just because it's kind of a good way to watch shows together when you're not together literally. And yeah, that's how we watched it. It was only 6 episodes, I think, but my goodness, it was just an absolutely incredible show. We watched it really quickly. I would have comfortably watched it in one sitting, to be honest, if we had the time. Yeah, so I mean, I watched it over a year ago, I'd say, and I still sort of think about it from time to time. It's one of those shows that definitely left a huge impact on me. But I'll throw the question back to you. You say you watched it recently. I mean, what were your thoughts on it? What were your thoughts on sort of, well, each episode, highlights, stuff like that?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, sort of to provide a little context, you know, I had made someone I know watch another Netflix show called Arcane, which came out at the end of last year, which I really, really love. And they sort of flipped the coin on me and said, oh, well, you've made me watch Arcane, which I rambled about in my last solo show. Don't listen to that show. Bit of a stinker, that one. But then they sort of recommended to me to watch Queen's Gambit, and so I was like, oh, okay, go on then. Despite the episodes being an hour, which I was not used to. Because for context, Alex, a big purpose of this show is the fact that I just don't know anything. I know no music, I know no shows, I know no films. I live under a rock for all intents and purposes. So when they had told me about The Queen's Gambit, you know, it was the first time I'd ever heard of it. I didn't really know what to expect. But yeah, you know, kind of sat down, got through sort of the first episode, and I believe they start with a flashback to either, a flash forward to either sort of the beginning of either episode 5 or 6, it's one, by the way, where it's...
Yeah, it's the really key sort of, it's one of her really key matches, isn't it, yeah, with...
It's where she's hung over and she wants to, well, she plays a chess game about against the Soviet menace. I don't know if he has any name, but
Bolgov. That's it. I've just looked it up because it was annoying me. Yeah,
he's like the peak of all of chess, and this is sort of Beth's. Well, the very beginning of the show sort of shows the morning of that, which we later learn why so dishevelled. But yeah, it sort of was like, oh, well, now I've got to see what's going on. I mean, thankfully I was watching it with someone, because I just, when it comes to flashbacks, flash forwards, I just get a bit lost. But, you know, it was, I actually really enjoyed, like, sort of watching Beth's sort of growing up environment in the orphanage. I mean, I can't remember the name of the orphanage. Not a real one, I presume they drug the kids. But that's sort of where they set up a lot of what would make Beth as a person later on. I mean, Mr. Scheibel, the sort of janitor who teaches at chess, who really annoyed, as this is sort of like my little tangent of the day. I really thought that she'd get in contact with Mr. Scheibel later in the series, but doesn't. But yeah, so it sort of sets up, you know, who teaches her chess. Because for anyone who doesn't know what the Queen's Gambit is, it's a show about this chess prodigy called Beth Harmon, who we've already sort of named a few times. And it's based on a book of the same name, I believe from the 1960s. If my Wikipedia reading serves me well. But yeah, I just really sort of liked how it set it up. It was sort of very natural, and the way that time progresses as well, like it just feels right, even though sometimes like you'll blink and then oh right, I'm like a couple of years later, but you know, it's seamless. I think, I mean,
I absolutely agree. I didn't mean to interrupt there, sorry, but I think a key thing about the show and what made it so brilliant was the pacing of it. I mean, it's only 6 episodes. I think each episode was sort of between 45 minutes and an hour long, and it had a huge amount of lifespan to cover. Of course, the first episode was focused on Beth as a child, like just after the accident that kills her biological mother, and she goes into the home. And the second is, I think it's more focused on kind of her teenage years, isn't it? And then from there, she goes into adulthood. But almost every episode is kind of a different phase of her life, even though sort of the later ones are sort of closer points. And I just think it's one of those shows that is so... It's quite understated in the way that there's... You know, it's not got kind of blistering special effects. It's not particularly over-dramatic, but it just has these moments that are so well done. And a moment that I think I'll never forget is that scene at the end of the first episode. I'll do a little spoiler warning in case anyone wants to watch it and hasn't seen it, but that scene where the guy who works at the orphanage who distributes the medications, and a few of the other people who are there, they run in. I think they're watching a film, and Beth escapes the film to start taking loads. Yeah, and there's almost like a slow motion when they all see her of Beth falling back, and it really sort of, well, you can kind of link it back to that first scene where it's the flash forward of her in that chess match where she's hungover, and it really sets the tone, you know, because before that it's just about chess, really, to be honest. That's the first real hint that Beth's gonna have to deal with drug abuse, substance abuse, and potentially alcoholism, and that's the first hint of it. And just the fact that it's a child, you know, an 11-year-old or a 12-year-old, that doing that
by the mouthful, well, what we later learn is it tranquilizes the pills that she becomes not addicted to, but almost dependent on for a chess performance. So that was actually something I was going to get onto, sort of, you know, how the show deals with sort of this almost like relationship with drugs that has. Because it's almost like it's not well, I wouldn't say it's an addiction, because she doesn't have to take them all the time, but it's almost like feeling dependent on this to be able to do specific things. And, you know, it's very, very well done. Because, you know, it even applies to sort of other things in life, you know, sort of my personal experience of, oh, goodness me, I need to, you know, bring painkillers no matter where I go, because otherwise I won't be able to function. You know, I'd imagine it's very similar to sort of that. I mean, it's a whole package, really. Sort of, you know, the way that, you know, the drug relationship is handled, I think, is really sort of fantastic. I mean, I think you were just about to get into a similar sort of line as well.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's two major themes, isn't it? Well, and they can be linked together. It's the theme of kind of success and the drive for success, but also the consequences of being the best at something and having that much pressure, which is sometimes substance abuse and alcoholism. And I think it's very interesting how they interlink, really. Something I just found really good. And Anya Taylor-Joy as Beth is absolutely fantastic, and I think she was already quite an established actress before The Queen's Gambit, but that certainly accelerated her career, and rightfully so. But beyond that, it's just really interesting how Beth always kind of has a sidekick. There's always someone she's with, and it's really important to have that character there because, well, it gives Beth kind of a platform, someone to communicate with, someone to trust. And it also makes it more tragic that there's never someone consistently there for her, whether that's abandonment or misfortune. And a key example of that is Alma, really, who's the stepmother who adopts Beth, I think, in the second episode. And
what would like to become a runaway husband as well.
Yeah, exactly. But he's basically one of the antagonists, isn't he? He's found to be up to no good. And there's that call, like Beth calls him, I think, after something bad happens to Alma, and he is completely heartless about it. So he's definitely one of the worst characters in the whole show. But yeah.
He's just a real nasty piece of work. But that's sort of like another interesting thing. I mean, obviously, he's sort of like a very bad guy. You know, he sort of left the family on their own. He just went, see you later, Tate. Mm. And just kind of really just abandoned them. But sort of in terms of like traditional antagonists, you know, sort of like Beth's chess opponent, you know, think of Borgov, think of, you know, I think in her first US Open that she competes in, you know, Harry Beltic, who she would become good friends with. You know, I think what I love about the show is that there's almost like there's no one evil, if you get what I mean. There's no one sort of there to be like the permanent overarching antagonist. And I think, you know, a lot of stories, you know, do revolve like an entire season will be like the journey to sort of overcome this rival. I mean, there is sort of that in the form of Borgov. You know, Borgov is sort of like the final challenge for, you know, Beth Harmon, the best player. But even then, it's not like I'll just beat you, sucker. You know, it's almost like there's a lot of mutual respect between the best players, and I think that's like a very sort of beautiful thing. And it's not very common in media, you know, to have sort of no one that you root against in a way. I mean, is that something you picked up on?
Yeah, exactly. And with Borgov, it's quite interesting because it suggested at points, I seem to remember, that he's almost forced into doing it. Like he's forced into being a chess player because of his success by, you know, Soviet governments and stuff. And I like the way that he's really neutral, that he's hard to read. And that he's also not like this caricature villain, because they could have very easily made, you know, the ultimate person that Beth has to be like a really, really nasty, classically bad character. But yeah, with Borgov, he is literally, it's more the idea of beating him that is what drives Beth. I don't think she has any particular strong feelings towards him as a person, but it's just the obsession with getting past him. And obviously at earlier points she has that to a degree with Harry and also Benny to a degree, who's a very important character. And I just the pacing's amazing, right, with the chess players. I mean, there's a clear level of progression between Harry, who she beats at a sort of state level championship, Benny, where I think it's the first international championship that she's in, and then Borgov being the, you know, the best, and Beth competing against him. And like these people at the start of each episode, where they're the sort of rival, they're seen as this almost like unbreakable, difficult person to beat, and then Beth is just able to get past them. And with Harry and Benny, they're on side with her. And almost they go from being the people that Beth wants to be and to people that are on her side, because in that last Yeah, in that last episode, Benny is part of that team that's like basically an analyst, like you'd have in almost any competitive sport. So it's just really interesting, and obviously it brings in themes of kind of it brings in social themes, it brings in kind of gender inequality, because at every point Beth is implied to be or perceived to be worse, particularly in that match with Harry Beltig, because she's a woman. And I remember she has to like make it really difficult to even get into the tournament, like she has to go through a lot of stress to do that. And it's nice because it subtly links to kind of the sexism that existed in the 1950s and 1960s.
I mean, yeah, I completely agree. Because I mean, sort of, we take almost for granted now, sort of the issues, the inequalities between gender, sort of being highlighted. It's highlighted, to a very good degree, at least sort of in the Western world. But in the 1950s and 60s, that's sort of something completely sort of gone from the mind. And I also sort of like as well, sort of like almost the change in sort of social attitude as well, because within the show, there's sort of many times where they could have easily gone to sort of villainize someone or, fall into traditional stereotypes. For example, I think it's the international organization which helps Beth get on the ball rolling in her international tournaments is like called like the Crusaders or Chess Crusaders, a group like that. And just right before her final showdown with Borgov in Moscow. They want her to sort of put out this almost anti-communist, anti-Russia sort of piece, affirming good American values. But at every turn, Beth and sort of the whole writing, the whole course of the show, consistently turns towards neutrality. I mean, I really, that's one of the things that I really like as well. They
Yeah, definitely.
just completely sit on the fence and let chess, to a degree, other than all sort of everything else going on in the show, let chess be sort of the highlight. It's like the. At the very end of the show, one of my favourite scenes is how she just leaves behind her sort of not escort, wrong term, her sort of guard, and just goes and plays chess with like common people on the street. It's lovely.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's an interesting point of the fashion and what she's wearing in that last scene, because she is literally sort of dressed like a queen, isn't she? And yeah, that is it links back to the key theme of the whole piece. And it's a really interesting show because there are allusions to kind of the time period, certainly in the fashion that they all wear. And as I said, that with the sort of gender inequality and the sexism and stuff like that. But at the same time, you're absolutely right. Like it's all about chess, and we see that from Beth's perspective. I mean, when she first joins the school, I think the first thing she asks is there a chessboard here? It's her obsession at the orphanage, and it's kind of the only thing that she really does socially. I know she has that friend Jolene, but beyond that, like that's all she really does at the orphanage. And of course, there's the scenes when she's in bed where she looks up and we see that projection or what she sees in her mind of the chessboard. And I think with a lot of shows, particularly shows set in the past, there's a big pressure to make sort of lots of points about the political narrative and the social narrative, and that's really good, that's really important. But in a way, the Queen's Gambit's so incredible because it's so focused on something that has never really been such a central theme of anything in TV and film before, in chess. So it's a really, really interesting show. And yeah, I think it's just one of those shows that I think everyone has to watch, to be honest. I can't recommend it any higher.
We can't big it up enough. Because I mean, it's a very good point you made with the chess, because I believe I was doing a bit of reading and sort of like I think it said that chess board sales went up by like 700% after the release of the show. I mean, obviously you have a background in sort of sports to a degree within the radio station. Has it sort of, if you consider chess a sport, has it, did it get your interest in chess up at all?
I did download an app, that one of those online chess apps, and yeah, I started in my student house at the time. A few of us started playing chess quite a lot. Like one of us brought up a chessboard. My housemate Alex brought a chessboard up, and we played it quite a bit. I was quite a bit worse than my housemate, so I lost quite a lot. But yeah, it really did it certainly piqued my personal interest in chess. I mean, I played quite a bit in primary school. We had a sort of chess club, and I guess I sort of lost interest in it. And yeah, it definitely made me a lot more interested in it. And in terms of chess as a sport, I mean, I'm kind of the opinion that a sport doesn't necessarily have to be something exercise driven. And there's sort of this debate over whether things like snooker and darts and pool and table tennis
and video games and stuff like that.
Yeah, and video games, sort of professional FIFA tournaments and chess and sort of board games, like whether they can be considered sports. And you have a lot of sort of hardline sports fans who will say absolutely not, you know, it's nowhere near as physically exerting. But I certainly think, you know, it's Charles Magnuson who's I think he's still like the chess grandmaster. I mean, I think it can be considered a sport because if you look at the amount of kind of training that's required at the highest level, the analytics that go into it, the capability of the people at the very top, the competitive element of it, the market as well. You know, I think there's quite a big market for sort of what's the word, like broadcasted chess and watching chess tournaments. So I think it can definitely be considered as that. Yeah, absolutely.
Lovely, because I've used to play chess quite a bit already at school. Not by any means was I any good. I used to just play it to pass the time. But this has definitely got my interest in chess back again. I'm trying to, you know, I've been searching the attic recently, trying to find an old chess board that I used to have, for example. But you know, I think it is good as well because, you know, it's just promoting sports that aren't physical exertion. There's a lot of ways you can be sort of top sports player without having to, you know, run around and get dirty in a field and all that sort of stuff.
The sort of styles associated with chess as well, I find really interesting. I mean, like in the same way you have different styles of football or rugby, whether you're sort of playing a more attacking way or a more consolidatory way where you try and score a few tries or a few goals and see out the game through your defence rather than your attack. I think in chess that's very much a thing as well. I read a thing about Magnuson and it's sort of when he was younger he was a very aggressive chess player. So like making of pieces, trying to get early checkmates, and then as he's got older apparently he sort of moved into like being a bit more pragmatic. And yeah, it's something that didn't really occur to me after the Queen's Gambit. You know, the players at the highest level definitely have quite a distinctive style and a way they play. And because I love kind of tactics in football and rugby and other sports, I find that really interesting.
I completely agree. I mean, you know, it's like when they have in the show, you know, talking about all the, you know, they're going for the open Sicilian or they're doing this, that, this and that, all the different sort of tactics. You know, it's no different to, you know, going back to sort of your specialty, you know, football, saying, oh, they're doing like a sort of, I mean, I don't know any sort of football tactics, but, you know, sort of they're doing like a wing back attack. I really don't know much about football, but it really is good, the Queen's Gambit. You know, just to sort of repeat what, you know, you've said yourself, I really certainly do recommend watching it, and this is coming from someone who watches nothing. So,
I mean, you think obviously this is like a TV, and obviously with this segment, it's like a big theme of this show, right? So, how would you compare it to kind of other shows that you've watched recently? I mean, for me, like I'd say it's probably one of the two best shows that I watched last year. I'd say alongside, did you watch It's a Sin like that?
I did not.
Okay, yeah, but I'd say they were, in very different ways, probably the two best shows that I watched last year and probably two of the best shows that I've ever seen, to be honest. So yeah, how would you compare it to kind of other shows that you've talked about on this show and other shows you've watched generally?
Well, it's interesting because I admittedly really haven't watched that many Netflix shows yet. I was supposed to be watching Bridgerton for Jacob, but he's not here. But it's not like anything else I've ever watched, especially sort of, you know, watching through the personal sort of development of Beth into sort of eventually overcoming her like sort of greatest challenge in Borgov, and also just overcoming sort of these many different personal problems that she has in her life, you know, a lot of which are out of her control, you know, the death of, you know, many of the people that she loves, you know, it's just really, really good. It's like a very, the best way I could sort of categorize it in my limited sort of smooth brain sort of way is that it's almost like a personal development story. But if that's a category that exists, I'd say it's probably the best I've ever seen in that category so far. It's really, really good.
The influence of other characters as well. I mean, we haven't really talked about Alma, but I think, you know, her alcoholism almost certainly had a huge impact on Beth. I know before she even met Alma, there were hints that she might sort of go into some form of substance dependency and potentially substance abuse as well with that first episode. But, you know, Alma's is a really interesting character because she's clearly, you know, trapped in a difficult, cold marriage. But at the same time, she's very caring towards Beth. She kind of drops everything, to be honest, like to help facilitate her chess career. And maybe there's some elements of self-interest in that, because I think it's implied that Alma really kind of enjoys the lifestyle of Beth going all over the country. But that's not necessarily a bad thing, you know. It's just she enjoys going out, and I don't know if you did, but I kind of expected, spoiler warning again, but I kind of expected Alma's death. Like, I didn't think it would happen in episode 4, but just the way, the constant kind of references to her drinking and the sort of excessive hedonistic nature of her lifestyle, like, I felt like it would happen. I didn't think it would happen, like, in that episode in the way it did. But yeah, I don't know, what were your thoughts on that?
See, it's strange, because that's one of the things that I really sort of didn't expect. I thought Alma had sort of become one of the stables in Beth's, you know, up until that point, sort of very unstable life. And I thought that we'd see Alma sort of to the very end, you know, being proud and being a mother and, like, sort of, you know, Beth finally feeling like she's found somewhere where she really belongs. You know, Mr. Scheibel's death, for example, you know, I sort of saw that coming. He was already back when Beth was little, as well as, you know, obviously the parents died at the very start, spoiler warning. But really, like, I was very shocked by, like, Alma's death, because, you know, where it happens in episode 4 when they're out on Mexico City, I think it is. You know, I just thought it was going to be like, oh, she's passed out from drinking, because what happens is that Beth sort of walks in the room and Alma is unfortunately passed on the bed. You know, didn't go down to see Beth perform in a chess tournament, which sort of annoyed Beth a little bit. And then sort of have Beth going back to the room talking about how the chess went. You know, talking to Alma on the bed, not even realizing that she'd gone. And I was just sort of blown away when, you know, it was confirmed and they had all the police and the you know, the doctors come in. I was just like, this is so sudden, I didn't expect this. Like, it took a lot of time for that to clock in my head. And so, but the relationship between Beth and Alma, you know, who became sort of the adoptive mother, I really enjoyed, because they were both so awkward at the start, but it just worked. It just really, really worked.
I think the layout of that house as well, when Beth first enters it, they deliberately make the scene sort of really slow and quite awkward. And it's that classic sort of very aggressive wallpaper. And I'm not an expert on interior design, but I remember when Beth walks in, she feels quite overwhelmed and uncomfortable, and as does sort of the audience too. And I think Beth sort of outgrowing people is really interesting. She obviously outgrows Mr. Schreibel in a way in the first episode. Of course, he's a huge influence on her. But then she starts beating him regularly. And then she almost moves on to the competitive element of it, getting into competitions and beats Harry. And she kind of outgrows Harry twice, because she outgrows him as a chess player. And then there's that episode after Alma dies where he, like, moves back in and sort of starts being like a guide to her. And then it's implied, well, he said that, like, his interest in chess and sort of depreciates. And again, she sort of moves on from him. And the same happens with Benny. I mean, when you first meet Benny, you think he's kind of, that he's like a bit nasty, to be honest, because there's he's got like the cat, he's got like a cowboy hat on or something. He's like bragging.
He keeps that cowboy hat for the whole show, and you laugh every time I saw it.
Yeah, and it's, and at the start, you know, he's the big shot, he's the he's aiming to be the best player in the United States and is really bragging about what he's done. And then at the end, he's basically completely subservient to Beth. But it's great. There's also, it's nice as well, that in a way, that the sort of the pill and alcohol dependency, it kind of needs to be there. Like, it's necessary to the plot because it's the thing that holds Beth back the most. Because literally, if that wasn't a theme, all that would happen is Beth would just be amazing at chess, right? Which would be, it would be probably a good show, but it probably wouldn't be as good or as powerful as it is in the theme.
Yeah, I think that definitely, it is almost like, even though in many terms Beth is sort of like the stereotypical, just exists and is better than everyone, you know, the way that it shows the development and what holds her back and how she is human, you know, that's what makes us believe she can go on to beat the best without it just being sort of given on a plate, sort of writer's plot armor, that's not the right term, literally plot armor, that's it, without sort of it being given on a plate. You know, we do feel by the end that she's really earned it, and it is a really good show. I mean, sort of to wrap up sort of the segment, because we've spent a lot of time talking about this.
Is
there any sort of final recommendations, remarks, similar shows that you'd like to give?
I mean, to be honest, like, I've not watched that many shows this year in terms of kind of dramas and Netflix originals and stuff. My sister's sort of started working indirectly for Disney Plus, so we've got Disney Plus now, which is really good for like Marvel stuff. So actually that is a bit of a lie because I've watched a lot of MCU. my girlfriend's got me into that, and I've watched pretty much every MCU film, all the TV shows as well. Very excited for Moon Knight. I need to sit down and watch the first couple of episodes of that too. But in terms of like, I'm trying to think, like, what was the last show I watched on Netflix? I genuinely have no idea. Like, I rewatch a lot of comedies and stuff. Like, I have quite a few comfort shows. You know, your Peep shows, Modern Families, Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Shows I really enjoy, and yeah, in terms of the MCU TV shows, I've really enjoyed WandaVision. We talked about like how good all the MCU shows are on our 24-hour show that we did a few weeks back, actually, and just finished Hawkeye as well, which is fantastic. There's a lot on my list. Like, I really want to watch something called Dope Sick, which is on Disney Plus, about basically controversies in the pharmaceutical industry. So that's on the list. The Witch is on the list. So that's something I constantly talk about watching. I actually never get around to watching. And things like, do you find on social media, like, I've had some shows spoiled for me, like by my sort of TikTok and Instagram and YouTube algorithms without even seeing some shows. Like Killing Eve, I know what happens and I've never seen the show because of social media. I don't know if that's happened to you at all.
You see, I think it has a lot. Killing Eve, you know, it's an interesting example because with sort of Arcane and Killing Eve, there's sort of a very weird subsection that of viewers that overlaps quite a lot, because I believe Killing Eve is about sort of this weird sort of inverted sort of romance relationship between this sort of cat and mouse game, this cop and this serial murderer, and it sort of overlaps with sort of this very this subset of Arcane viewers who really enjoy sort of the relationship between Vi and Caitlin. I happen to fall into that subsection, but there you go. But it's interesting because I now know what happened in Killing Eve, but I'm not sure if it's been bothered just yet, because it's not like I had ever even thought to go out and watch Killing Eve. I mean,
right, yeah.
Take Harry Potter, for example. Until August of last year, I'd never read or seen any of the Harry Potter films or books.
Really?
No, not at all. And even then, I haven't seen the films. I've only read the books. But the thing is that even though in popular media, everyone talks about all of these things, just assuming everyone knows it happens, because I'm such a rock, living under a rock, you know, it's almost like I read it, but because I don't know what it means, I don't take it in. So when I watch the show, it's still fresh. So it's like advocating for living under a rock, perhaps. But yeah, I think looking at the time now, you know, as sad as it is, I am going to have to bring this show to a close, which is, you know, very sad. You know, I would have loved to continue making this a 2-hour episode, but then again, would our listeners want a 2-hour Mellob experience? I do not know. But, you know, I must say a very big thank you to Alex Duke for joining me on the show today. You've been absolutely amazing. Your knowledge of Queen's Gambit is way beyond mine.
Well, thank you. And I'm literally beyond talking a bit about Marvel on my 24-hour show. I've never done any kind of TV or film reviewing. I'd love to do a bit more, actually. It's quite good fun. Thank you for having me on, Ben.
No worries, it's been a pleasure. And so, sort of to close off the show, as per Mellob experience usual, we're having to cut a segment, and by cut a section I mean cut every single other section of the show. But this is nothing new. And so one of my sort of guilty listens is sort of to fade out the show, you know, thank you for listening, viewers, thank you, do tune in 2 weeks' time, all that sort of generic stuff. But sort of to end, I do have a song that is predominantly in Russian, admittedly more of an After Dark song, so I don't know whether this will be your cup of tea, Alex, but I picked it for the loosest of connections. Some of the lyrics are in Russian. Beth goes on to play chess in Soviet Union, so close enough for me. And so thank you for listening to this Mellob experience. Thank you for joining me, Alex Duke. It is Vampire by Ice Speak featuring Ollie Sykes. See you all soon.